This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our Crail C gathering today. We're going to celebrate Irit Umani and her ministry. And we've got some new technology that we're using here. This is an owl camera that actually hoots when you first turn it on. And so up in the right-hand corner, you're seeing basically what our Zoom audience is seeing. They're able to get a panorama of the room, as well as an up-close of any speakers. The owl will pick up whoever's speaking and focus the camera on it. So when there's time for questions or discussions at the end, please come to this microphone so that our folks on Zoom can see you and hear you. And we're going to let Irit spend a little bit of time sharing with us about her ministry, and then Pastor Angela is going to interview her. They've had some questions that they've worked up to have this conversation with all of us present. We also want to acknowledge that Father Chuck is on the Zoom today, so he is quarantining, observing his COVID protocols at home. Yes, he tested positive for COVID this past week, so he's been intimately engaged in Zoom meetings and now Crail C Zoom. So, all right. So, Irit, please share with us.
Good morning. Let me start with the fact that I feel deeply honored to be invited to have a conversation about service. It's not just about Trinity, it's about the life of service. And I just came back yesterday from 3 weeks in New Mexico in this intentional spiritual community called the Lama Foundation, where I lived in the mid-80s and for 3 years, and which really informed the rest of my life after that. And the Lama Foundation's mission, to put it very shortly, is about three pillars. One is spiritual practices, parentheses in of all traditions. The other is service, what's known in Buddhism as seva, selfless service. And the other is community, living in community. So spiritual practices, service, and living in community. And one of my spiritual teachers of many years ago, no longer alive, had a saying that, again, is about an approach to a spiritual path of service. And it says, love everyone, serve everyone, and remember God. Love everyone, serve everyone, and remember God. All three of them are quite a challenge, by the way, because I'm still on a journey to love everyone and to always remember God. Less funny, because by now I should be there. And to me, it seems like the spiritual practices and the needing to belong, to be in community, is really why people come to churches on Sunday and to synagogues on Saturday and to mosques on Fridays, and likewise all other traditions. We come together because community helps us to remember God. And we have a spiritual practice of, in our case here, the spiritual practices of Christianity, in the Episcopal interpretation of it, right? But service, seva, selfless service, is what we are supposed to do between Sunday to Sunday. So we come together to sing and to remember God and to feel that we are a part of a community so that we can serve better between Monday and the next Sunday. And to me, it's the reason churches exist, or in my tradition of birth, synagogue exists. Because if we, well, first of all, a little side note, all I can give you is my take. It's not the truth, it's only my truth. So bear with me, and whatever is helpful for you, use, and what's not helpful for you, throw on the way out. because that's all I can give is my path and my work at Trinity and my sense of why I do this work and why the church created Trinity Center. You know, when I was at the Lama Foundation for almost 3 weeks, about a week ago, a young woman came to try and be there for either the summer or for just 2 weeks and to find out about that place. And it was clear immediately that she is not mentally balanced, let's put it that way. And which is, by the way, another side note, the way I talk about the people who come to Trinity Center is not and are mentally challenged. Do you hear the difference between mentally challenged and mentally ill? Right? Because I think we are all on a spectrum in that way.
100%.
Right? So she was dwelling, she was hearing voices, she was dwelling in a reality that this young community up in the hills of, in the mountains of northern New Mexico with really rustic style of living could not hold her. There was not a professional person to attend to her needs, and we couldn't, the place. And a person who is the liaison to all these people coming and going immediately noticed, everybody noticed that something is off. And she talked about it, you know, she talked about hearing voices. She stayed with her. It was, you know, one of the choices we had is to say, say her name is Susan. Susan, we cannot have you here, you need to leave. Which was the truth. And yet, Kathy stayed with her until another solution where she can go was found. So she dedicated full 4 days. She spoke with the young woman's mother and with her best friend, with a psychiatrist that saw her before, with places that she could go live. And that was her all doing. Meanwhile, really dealing with the barrage of out of the ordinary, let's say, communication. But she did not leave her until she found her a place to go that was acceptable to the other people who traded with her. And that was a choice between just saying, we're sorry, but you can't stay here, to staying with the person until you find a solution. That's service. To me, that's service. That's loving God. That's seeing God in this woman's in disguise. Because I really strongly believe that all of who we are is a reflection of the beloved. And Kathy saw the beloved in this woman. Everybody else freaked out. I was so impressed with her, and there was the moment when we were chanting for a very long time, and it can take you to an altered state of mind. And I came to this woman in the middle of it, and I said to her, "I think that's enough for now. You're very fragile, and this practice can talk." Take you to a place that you're not ready to go because you're not grounded enough. And I suggested to her that, you know, half an hour of it is enough. And she listened because she heard my heart, not my words. She knew that I'm seeing her. And we have that at Trinity Center every day. We serve people who are otherwise really criticized and judged. And my sense is, who is to throw the first stone? And on what and why? And in our reality of fierce capitalism, more is better, always more is better. The people that we serve down at Trinity Center practically have nothing. Right? And Jesus told us to go and do likewise. What's the likewise? He actually didn't talk about going to churches on Sunday. Not to mention he wasn't Christian, right? Now, I think he was a progressive rabbi of my faith. too progressive for his time. Think about it. He was a Jewish man, way too progressive for his time. Why? Because he told folks to actually walk the talk. That go feed people, heal the sick. He was so progressive that the people in power at the temple in Jerusalem couldn't take it because it actually demanded of them to walk the path, right? Yeah. So many times I said about the creation of Trinity Center at St. David's, the way I say about it is some people who come to church here actually listen. And there are two shelters across the street, right? And that's the main hub for services to the unhoused in Austin. So people in this church, a group of them, you know, said, we cannot come to church and ignore the fact that a block away from us are the poorest of the poor, the people who are living in this 102 degrees on the pavement. And we are asked to do something about it, to engage, to be in service to them. It's not very complicated, actually. You know, the part that I love, because I've been in nonprofit in other places, mostly in the field of domestic violence, which is a whole other lecture. What I really love about Trinity Center, it's the very basic needs. It serves the need to be fed. It pays for simple things. Think about the people who, without ID, they cannot get any services. They cannot be in the system. They cannot get housing. They cannot get health and mental health and all of it just because they don't have this ID. And this ID cost, depends on their circumstances, $11 to $16, and they don't have it. So we pay for it so that they have one step towards some improvement and towards some services. Or a family says of a young, to a young, you know, on the street person, you can come home, we'll give you another chance, we'll start from the beginning, right? But they can't get there. We buy them the Greyhound ticket to go home and end their homelessness, actually, because the main issue of homelessness is, as Alan Graham from Community First says it, a catastrophic breakdown in family dynamics because all these people have family somewhere. So I know my family would not let me be on the street, right? So if a family is inviting a person to come back home, that has a huge potential to end their homelessness. And then we just open the door and people can she will soon be sick or be warm in a freeze, right? It's basic. It's not about PhD. It's not about, you know, getting a profession. It's not about, you know, it's about the basic needs to belong and basic services. And I'm so proud to, first of all, I'm so honored that you chose me. Because, you know, when I applied, I thought, fat chance. Really, I did. I came from a different area of nonprofit, from domestic violence. I was in California. Why wouldn't you take a local one? And I was of a different faith, even more so. And yet here we are. And there's stuff about how I was chosen beside my experience in nonprofit management, that in my interview, I was asked about being of a different faith. And I said I'm a Jew, a Jewish Buddhist. And all that this church want to know is that I'm comfortable with faith-based, which of course I am. You know, I am a person of faith. To the best of my ability, I fall on my face all the time, but my commitment is there. So I get up and I start again. And the exclusivity of it, of saying, that's fine with us that we get in Jubu to do our main outreach service, right? You know, and I remember when David said, I think by now you're a Jubupelian, right? Because I embrace this place as my community. And because I come from Israel, a place of war between the three traditions, you gave me a huge gift because I always knew that I loved Jesus because he speak truth. Mm-hmm. I speak truth to the best of my ability, sometimes too directly. And before I came here, that specific tradition, that specific faith was the one I felt the farthest away from, had to do with history and the struggle. And the gist of all faith tradition, we are asked the same. We are asked to walk it, to practice it, to be kind, you know, the bottom line, be kind, care for others. Because our little unit of family and church is not enough. And I feel that when I will come to the gate up there and be asked all kinds of questions about right and wrong in my life, on service, I get the door open.
Check.
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 There are a whole lot of list of things that I need to ask forgiveness for. But not on, I think, by, you know, life of
I think
service.
You got that one covered.
I got that one covered.
Yeah, definitely.
And it enriched my life tremendously because it's so comfortable to sit in our own little, everybody around us, we choose the friend that agree with us anyway, and we, you know. But we are asked to get out of our comfort zone mm-hmm. in order to serve, right?
You could have preached today. Today's lesson, yeah. Right? Jesus says, follow me.
Yeah. And what does he mean by follow me, right?
It's not just enough. That was my sermon. It's not just enough to worship.
Exactly.
You have to follow him. Do the deeds, as he
do
says.
Do the deeds. And the deeds is love thy neighbor. That's the deed. There is a story in the Jewish tradition that Rabbi... I forget the name, it's 16th century. Let's say Rabbi Joseph is asked, Can you teach us the Torah while standing on one leg? Meaning, can you give us the gist of it? And he says, love thy fellow being as thyself. The rest is commentary. Go practice. And by the way, it's not thy neighbor in Hebrew. It's thy fellow being, right? So it's not who you're just comfortable with.
All right. You ready for some questions?
Yes.
So you told us a little bit that you were working in a nonprofit, working with folks of domestic violence. And so how did you hear about Trinity and this position? And then, second part, why did you apply? What about the job sort of appealed to you?
So to be honest, I was in California, in Berkeley, and I was the program director, not the executive director of a nonprofit that was serving women and children fleeing abuse, right? And I was questioning the ED about some misuse of funds. Like, we got some grants, government grants, and we were supposed to for that big money grant, we were supposed to hire additional staff, and she decided to get the grant but not hire the staff, which made my life harder because it was staff for people to do service. And I was questioning that, and that was the end of my time there. She went after me like nobody's business. And so in no time, I went from exceeding all expectations to being put on notice. So after she really, you know, I was going home and crying on the way home. And I approached her, I said, let's come, you know, clearly you don't want me here anymore. Let's come to some agreement of how I live. And I left, and the reason I applied here, I looked all over the place to find work, and it was in the midst of that crisis, financial crisis of 2008-9. Mm-hmm. And I put Austin on my radar because my son moved here and found his bishurt, as we say in Jewish, his beloved, and was about to get married and start a family. And I didn't want to move to a place where I didn't know a soul. So I was looking where I was, and near my sister and near my son. And this position came up on Craigslist. There wasn't Indeed then, and some other kind of that kind of stuff. And I applied thinking no chance, and here I am.
There you go.
There we go.
Meant to be.
You're right. Yeah. It was, and no question in my mind, it was meant to be, no question.
So what was, tell us about a nice surprise or a wow when you came to work for Trinity Center.
Nice surprise or so, not so nice surprise.
Oh yeah, sometimes.
Some surprises. One, I found that, the budget is crazy small and is on deficit. And I found that the staff, knowing that the budget doesn't cover everybody, was in really difficult, everyone trying to prove that they are needed more than the other. And of course, none of it is told to you in an interview. So we were in a bit of a crisis, and that had to be addressed. I also found that it works mostly by volunteers, which I love. I found that a good surprise to me still is that it is not fed by government funding, which gives you much more freedom to serve everyone, because you don't need to prove how many people. You move from point A to point B. You work with the people where they're at, and you accept those who are not ready to do any movement. And when you get government funding, it's always about some crazy hours of reports, right? And here we are, we open the door and everybody is welcome as with one rule, that respect is mutual. Challenged as the people are, we don't deserve to be the place to put your frustration on. And we've been talked to once in a while, we are, there's some very unkind language coming our way. And it's not about us, it's because we are a safe place to feel whatever, so it's projected on us. But we don't accept any aggression of any sort, including verbal. But even when we ask somebody to leave because they called us names that are not okay to repeat in a church, they can come back. There is a place for redemption, always. Always there is a place for redemption.
That's the gospel.
That's the way. Here we go. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. So you talked about some of the financial sort of challenges when you first came on. You know, how did you address those?
I was selling my passion about it. Really. You know, I looked to grant from a foundation that are interested in our issue, the issue of homelessness and poverty. And I write grant in a bit of a different way in the narrative, you know, in the details of budget, there's some details and, you know, lots of documentation that you need to show that you're a nonprofit and that you're in good standing and who is your board. And, but the story I tell is a story of passion for the people. So if I may say it myself, I'm a good grant writer. And it's all about relationship. It's all about relationship. It's like, you know, there was a Christmas, we do a Christmas party every year. So there was a Christmas party and I noticed this family that I haven't known before. So I approached them and I started a conversation. And we actually talked about stuff not related to Trinity and poverty and anything. The, you know, the man said to me, this is my ex-wife, so-and-so. And I was like, I was so impressed that they're such good friends because that was not my case with my ex-husband. And we talked about that, you know, the little thing. He said, of course, we're friends. We have children together. So the conversation went all kind of places. And before they left, he said to me, I'm inviting you to apply for a grant to the Moody Foundation. So I looked them up and I applied for $25,000 and I got a phone call, which never happened to me in 30 some odd years of working in nonprofit, ever happened to me before. Got a call from the foundation and says, Mr. Moody is asking you to apply for
$75,000. Wow.
I said, okay, I think I can do that. It's all about that conversation that we had before. I didn't know them, right?
There you go.
So I cultivate relationship. And other tricks, you know, we moved our silly luncheon that yearly fundraising that we were very happy if it got us $35,000 to an event here. I said, why give any money to any hotels when this church gives us so much and we have 1 year event that we pay to a vendor, it should be at home, right? And we changed that and we changed it to an, you know, cocktail parties type of things. And when was it, April? We brought in over $240,000 from our supporters.
It was amazing.
Yeah. And you know, I think it was partly part of my going away party. So let's go back to 200. But 200 we brought before. So, you know, I look to how to make Trinity Center part of the community, that if people of means are too busy being people of means, they help us financially. Mm-hmm. And it's fundraising is a sell pitch. And you need to really believe in what you're doing.
Eric can speak a little bit to that too. But yeah, so aside from, you know, sort of grants, aside from the fundraising, is there any other way that things changed during your tenure from when you first got here?
Well, we got much bigger, and my because it is given that we are about hospitality for everybody. That's the main, you know, mission of Trinity Center. That's first, accepting all and being hospitable to all. And because of where I came from before in my work, I wanted to add to it that when we can help somebody move from point A to point B, we should. Mm-hmm. Yes, we accept everybody, including those who are not ready to make any progress, but those who are ready, we should be there for them. So our case management program grew tremendously because nobody can walk out of homelessness by themselves. Nobody, not one person. It takes a village, it takes a family, it takes professional people. So we enhanced our case management program.
Wow. So how about, can you share a particular inspiring story from your tenure here that kept you going and passionate about the work? You know, when we talk about impacting people's lives, is there anything that really stands out to you?
So one of the stories that I'm taking with me is we had this beautiful 60-ish year old woman coming every day, skinny, sad. You could tell she had quite a journey in her life. And there was a phone call that came from a woman in Utah looking for her mother and asking us if we happen to know her, because she heard she's in the street of Austin and she was looking to find her mother. And the story was of such alienation and abuse and being taken by the father away from the mother, and the mother shunned away and considered again mentally challenged. And we knew that woman when the request came. So we approached her and told her that her daughter is looking for her, and like tears were flowing because she was trying for years to be in touch, and being in touch was not allowed. And it's a longer story, but I was actually sitting with this woman in the library here, reuniting, seeing the reunification with the daughter. Mm-hmm. The daughter came from Utah to take her mother home. And the way they fell on each other's arms and the healing that took place in that family. And then they sent me pictures of, you know, with grandchildren and other, you know, it was like, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I have the picture as the daughter is walking the hall and we're walking towards her and the falling on each other's arm, and it's there. Yeah, it's like, beautiful. You know, how lucky am I? Yeah.
That's beautiful. So what do you think lies ahead for homeless ministry in Austin and in our community? What do you think lies ahead, challenges and And maybe even in the wider.
You know, the another thing is the solution is known. There are enough research and enough city council member going to other cities to see what other cities are doing and coming back with great idea. And, you know, you look at what happened when the pandemic happened and people came out of the woods and all of a sudden under every bridge, there was an encampment. Mm-hmm. And I agree that that was not sustainable, right? But people came out of the woods. You know, there was a time when the pandemic started and we shut down that the only people you saw downtown are the homeless. Everybody else was home. And all of a sudden it looked huge because the numbers were in our faces, right? And then some people in town got very uncomfortable with having those people in their faces. Mm-hmm. So they started advocating for better solution. And I'm not going to go into the political arena on this and many other issues. But so the city promised to create, because even the police says, you can't keep telling us what the people can't be without telling us what they can be. So the city council got together and they promised you and I and everybody that they're gonna create 9 different in each precinct, an allowable camping space that will come with services, with some benches, with some shade, with some water. The 9 became 2 and the 2 became 0. Mm-hmm. So when people were chased out of the streets, out of our faces, so that we keep being comfortable mm-hmm. with our comfortable life, no solution was given, right? I see you, just give me a second. Subsidized housing is the solution with wraparound services. Because some of these folks, by the way, the street is their community. They vouch for one another. They're in a community. And it's very hard to move from there to a house and keep staying there for mental challenges, for substance abuse challenges, and for loneliness. And so just housing people is not enough. It's housing with wraparound services. Mm-hmm. And it's not, it just needs to be a priority. And I don't think we'll ever solve 100% of it, but we can solve 80% of it. Quite good in my book. Mm-hmm. Right? If we made it a priority. And it's cheaper than what we're doing, by the way. Cheaper than emergency rooms, than prisons, and you know, but we need to listen on Sundays.
And then go out and serve.
And then go out and do likewise.
So it's interesting you said that, because I have a list of questions from Chuck, by the way.
but if we can have others.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Can you come up to the... to the mic if you're going to ask.
Here's a woman who's been raised. Yeah, come on.
Yeah, that's fine. You need to come up to the mic and ask a question to the mic.
And Chuck, please get well and forgive us for calling in on some questions from the audience.
No, that's fine. It's fine. I'm just sorry to be there, but this is a great presentation, y'all. Keep going.
Okay. Yeah.
To what extent can organizations offer ways to empower for homeless and the people that come to us for help? How can we empower them, help them unlearn helplessness and learn a little bit of, I know I can't use the word self-sufficiency, but if I could, self-sufficiency. Mm-hmm. Empower them to help them help themselves.
Yeah.
off the
streets? So two things. First of all, thank you for your question. Please remember that none of us is self-sufficient. None of us. We have family, we have church, we have community, we have financial means, education. All of those are tools that these people don't have. None of us is self-sufficient. That's the thought. And then the more people feel acceptance from you, the more they're willing to try stuff. And then for substance abuse folks and mentally challenged folks, the issue is on us, not on them. What we offer to a mentally challenged person who doesn't have financial means, shame on us. Because when we closed, we American, we Reagan, closed all mental halfway houses and institutions because it was unfair and whatever. There was promise again, just like the nine camps, to create other alternatives. So first of all the institutions closed and then alternatives were not created. So that we have no solution that supports a schizophrenic, dissociative identity disorder person to live safely somewhere, is not on that person, it's on us. And then in my view, one-on-one case management, opening the doors that are available. And one of the beauty that I really admire Alan Graham and Community First Village is the word community first. He understands that it's about belonging. Not only does he offer a place to live, he offers community, belonging.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
So, hold this closer to me. I'm going to end this with a question for you, Reed. A little bit of a challenge question. But first I want to make a comment about what's truly necessary for every one of us to do. And you said, by way of invitation, be there on Sunday and listen. But Sunday is just the beginning, right? Whenever your worship time is, I think if we talk about working with the homeless community, with people who suffer. And if we talk about being involved, then it starts with us, starts with me, it starts with my little cohort. And if I'm raising children, they need to know about it and they need to be involved. And the absolute critical point is that there should be no division between this community and that community over there who suffer. So that's my truth for you. And now for my challenging question. So Reed, you got here many years ago, and just imagine yourself coming into this position that you have had tenure in now at this time. What would you do radically different?
So I think there are two parts. One, I want to say, I'm not asking everybody to work with the homeless. I'm asking everybody to do a work of service. Find the issue and the calling of your heart. It can be dying people, hospice. It can be people who are ill. It can be fostering, the foster care system. It can be any other. I happen to live my life in two different issues of service mostly, but I'm not saying everybody needs to deal with quite a challenging community, the community that lives on the street, but find something where you expand yourself to embrace people you otherwise don't see. Whatever is the issue, there is tons of work needing to be done. What would I do radically different?
Or maybe another sort of to plays on that. What advice would you give the person coming in, or sort of steps forward, you know, in terms of what has to happen? Yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was quite many years that I thought of myself as a radical feminist and a radical leftist, and I'm too old now to continue that. The radical force is the force of movement, but the change happens by people less radical, actually. And it took me years to get that, you know, into my 70s. That the radical are the people to move an issue. And then you need people on the field who doesn't alienate everybody by the radicalism, right? And so I'm no longer radical, which I can, you know, 72 coming next month. And, I think people my age in the political arena and any arena should go home and give it to the younger generation. And that holding to a seat until we die makes no sense to me. Plus, it's not respectful of all stages of life. And I think I want to live the chapter of an elder fully as I try to live the rest of my life fully. And if I hang in there, the next generation doesn't have a place to rise into their power and what they see is needed. One place that I was more involved with when I first came and then I stopped that really needs to happen is advocacy with the power that be. And I went to City Hall meeting and to the Capitol and I got like so, I got to a point where I wanted to just serve well and love well. And there is tons of work that needs to happen in pushing them political people into action. And it's for a younger person that still has hope and aspiration and more energy than I do. Mm-hmm. I want to go smell more roses.
You've done well. I think we do have time for one more question, so.
It's not a question, it's a comment.
Okay.
The last congregation I was with was a mixture of Lutherans and Episcopalians. So with the vesting of both bishops, we had a little more freedom. We didn't have to follow the books quite so closely. So my favorite dismissal from those days was, our worship is over, our service begins.
Exactly. Our worship is over, our service begin. I could open and end with it and say nothing in between. Our service is over, our worship is over, our service begin. And I'm not, please don't hear me as a criticism. You here, I look around, most of you are involved with us. And you come here because, you know, it's like I'm preaching to the choir, right? But really, to the best of our ability, love everyone, serve everyone, and remember God. And God comes in disguise. You know, when a person at the Lama Foundation wants something and they say, I hear the calling for blah, blah, blah. I'm really grounded person. And I go like, and how did it sound? I'm very interested, right? And I think it's simpler than that. And when the person says, I heard the calling, they usually hear their ego speaking. And I would not dare call the voice of my ego the calling, right? And we are called to care deeply. We are called to care deeply. And well, we need to finish soon, right? You know, so one more remark. As you know, I come from a war zone. And that informed my being almost more than anything else. When I moved from, both time when I moved from Israel here, I moved twice. It took years for my reflex to jump at the sound that is out of the ordinary, for the hearing of the missile sounds and the bomb falling sound shaking the house, and for the sorrow in my family and friends who didn't make it back from war. And how many of you have been to Jerusalem? So there is about maybe 3 square miles of the old city of Jerusalem, where you can see, you can stand in a certain place and see the Jewish people in the Western Wall praying, and the call to prayer of the muezzin, and the church bell are ringing. If that's not a holy moment, I don't know what is, right? And we're killing each other because each one of us think that that square mile is only ours. We want it all. And we're cousins. Mm-hmm. We're cousins. It's all about, you know, fight for inheritance of God knows how many thousands of years. We're still fighting for the inheritance of Abraham, who in the same way, by the way, was not Jewish. My commitment to walk the walk of peace, that's why I intentionally practice of different traditions. Because all I can do is in my heart, in my practice, bring it together. That's all I can do. There is one. There's only one. The beloved is one. Different path on that mountain. One goes like this, then goes like puff. If you don't sit straight, we'll whack you, right? You know, and this path and the other path and all of them, because we fall, we go back, we keep climbing that mountain of spiritual life. And at the top, there is a top. We all meet. We all meet. There is one. There's one beloved, which we worship in different languages, in different ways, in different little, you know, and all of them are telling us to serve well. So go do likewise as I go smell roses.
And so at the end of our services, we always do a dismissal as well. I mean, that's a lovely one, but one of our standard ones from the Book of Common Prayer is to go in peace and to love and to serve the Lord. So go and do likewise.
Hallelujah.
Amen.
Thank you.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.